tonight to share their experience, strength, and hope, we have Mike from the Greenville Higher Power Group.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mike. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And like I always say, I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. And that's the disease of alcoholism. And every one of us in this room here have the same thing. We didn't know we were alcoholics. I don't think any one of us ever knew. You know, I was born and raised in Ireland a few years ago. And I grew up there. My father was a farmer, good one too. And I had a wonderful childhood. I'm the oldest of six of a family. My mother was a devout pioneer. I have members of my family who never had a drink. I have other members of my family who drank plenty, including me. I had my first drink at 11 years of age. There used to be a thing on the wireless, they call them the radio, or the wireless back in Ireland. We weren't into televisions in them times. And we didn't have them or couldn't afford to have them. And they used to say, Guinness is good for you. So at 11 years of age, this man, my grandfather, gave me a bottle of Guinness. And I drank it and I fell rightly in love with it. I love this Guinness. All right, move along a few years anyway. At a very young age, I went to work for this gentleman and his wife and three kids. He was an invalid. He suffered from arthritis. And he paid me so much a week. I lived in their house. And I eat my meals there. And I took care of their place. And he paid me so much. And on the weekends, I would hit into town. And I would go into what they call the public house, the bar. And I would drink the Guinness. And something happened to me at a very early stage. I had a big tolerance for alcohol. Now, at that time, I was drinking all Guinness. At a young age, I arrived in this great country. I came to the Highbridge section of the Bronx, Shakespeare Avenue. And there was a couple of guys down there, and they were talking about Fleischmann's and Schaefer and Rheingold and all that. But in between that, on the way in from the airport, which was not Kennedy Airport at that time, it was Idlewild Airport, this guy was talking about a gin mill. And I said, what the hell is a gin mill? You know, and there was a girl that had been back to Ireland. She had been in this country before. And I said to her, what's a gin mill? Oh, she said, that's a bar. I said, thank you very much. I never had to ask her that question again. You know. So I got a job. I worked for a supermarket downtown. I was what they called a delivery boy. I made a lot of money. Oh, I made a lot of money delivering groceries for me. You know, they used to tell me about my Irish face and my Irish this and my Irish that. And believe me, I lived up to it, so I did. And at night time, you know what I mean, I used to go in and have some of the Schaefer beer and some of that Rheingold beer. And they had Ballantine beer too at that time and Ballantine ale. And then I shared an apartment with a few guys, but two of them got married, and then there was only one guy left on myself. And this guy was a bus driver, and he liked to drink Fleischmann's and a beer. So I would meet him in Carr's Bar and Shakespeare Avenue in the evening, and I'd be only having the Schaefer beer, but he'd be having a shot and a beer. So I said, I got to get a couple of them shots now, because you know, if I'm going to keep buying him shots, I'm going to have a couple myself. So I started drinking the Fleischmann's too. You know, when you start any of this kind of stuff, you know, I mean, whiskey was something I wasn't familiar with. I used to get a bit sick from it, but I worked hard at making sure it was all staying down. Worked very hard at it, you know. Then we moved out of the Highbridge and we moved up to the Fordham section of the Bronx. Oh my God, what a place to go. There was bars in every corner. If you fell out of one, you could fall into the other one, you know. And I took a job in working in construction. Oh, it was tailor-made for an alcoholic. Construction was a great job, you know. They used to have the 9 o'clock break in the morning. You could have a drink, and you could have more drinks at lunchtime, and then you could have more drinks and whenever, you know, you could have a drink any time on construction in them days, you know. And I had no trouble getting work because I knew a lot of people. And I also, if construction was slow, I could work in the Sandhogs down in the tunnels as well. Because the guy that was in charge of the union, his mother and I were from back home in the old country together. And I knew her very well, and I knew her daughter, and I knew the family very well, you know. So then, I started, you know, and sometimes, like, you know, I mean, now it was, I found myself that I was going into bars like 7 nights a week, you know, now. I'm going in about 7 nights a week. I really loved alcohol. I'm not ever going to say I loved it. Too bad it didn't love me, but that's the way it was, you know. And I remember, like, coming home from construction jobs, I'd be afraid that, I used to hate if the train stalled between stations. You know, and when I would get up to Fordham Road in the Bronx and I would get off the train, and any bar I was going into around there that time, they didn't ever ask me what I was having, they knew what I was having. So I was one night in there and I was having the Fleischmann's anyway, and this guy came in, Jimmy, and I said to him, I don't feel good in the morning sometime, you know, I said, and the whole lot. And I said, I don't know, this booze is not agreeing with me that well. Oh, he said to me, you know, you're drinking the wrong brand, he said. You shouldn't drink that Fleischmann's, he said. You should drink VO. And he said, always make sure you stand up when you're drinking. And he said, when you have a lot drank, he said, if you feel you're going to fall, he said, make sure you sit down. And that's what I done. I mean, what the hell? He's a guy in a bar. He told me, give me the facts, you know. But, you know. And for the next 18 years, that's what I drank, shots of VO and glasses of beer. That's exactly what I drank. I didn't know anything about these mixed drinks. I don't know anything about them things at all, but I could make the mixed drinks. Now, from being working in construction, I also became a bartender. A guy brought me downtown, Third Avenue, a guy I grew up with. I didn't grow up with him, but I knew his family back in Ireland. We were neighbors, actually. And he had been in this country long before me. And he said, come on down, he says, and I'll show you the ropes here. He didn't have too much to show me because I was so long going into bars and drinking in them. I really knew the ropes, so I did, you know. And I started a part-time job bartending. Oh, boy, did I ever get going. Well, anyway, there was jobs coming up that time. You know, they were looking for guys. They were starting the transit cops at that time. At night, they'd have the cops from 8 p.m. at night till 8 to 4 a.m. in the morning. And there was a very nice cop there. He was doing the recruiting, and he pleaded with me to join the cops. But I figured it out, you know what I mean? I said, I don't think this cop job would suit me that good. I said, you know, I said, if I'm going to be on the subway station at night or in the subway car, I said, and I get the urge for a drink, I said, how the hell am I going to go into a bar, I said, with a gun on me, I said, and a uniform on me. I said, I can't take that job, you know. Yeah. Then this other man approached me, and he said to me, get away from that old construction, he said, you're in, and the whole lot. He said, you can make do better than that. He said, I get you a job driving a bus. Now, that was from the transit authority. Great job, great job. But then I figured that one out too. You know, how the hell am I going to, if I get a busload of people and I get the urge for a few drinks, and I want to go in to have a few drinks, how the hell am I going to leave all these people sitting on the bus and I go into a bar? You know what I mean, you know. Now, this is the way that alcohol was working on me. This is how it was doing to me, you know what I mean, you know. And it was the same with everything. No matter what other job, I figured it out to myself. This is my own figuring out now. The only job for me was bartending, part-time, and construction. That's the only thing. And that's what I done for years. And I got hired. I got laid off. Well, I guess they were firing me, but that's a nice way of doing it. We're having a layoff. Yeah, having a layoff. Yeah. I wasn't the only one in that condition. But, you know, I got this thing into my head. I cannot be one of the boys if I'm not drinking and working on construction. I can't be one of the boys if I'm bartending and don't drink. I remember working for owners, and this is sure as I'm standing here tonight in Carroll, and they'll say to me, you're a very honest man. These other bartenders, when they're here, they don't take in as much money as you. I think they're clipping me and the whole lot. See, what I was doing was, everybody that asked me to have a drink, I'd have a drink and I'd ring up the money. Everybody, you know. And I had a big tolerance for alcohol, you know. You know, you wouldn't, you know, and I wasn't ever one of these guys. I wasn't into singing, and I wasn't running after some guy's wife or girlfriend or anything like that. I strictly went into a bar to drink. That's what I went into, to a bar to drink. And I'm here in this program for quite a while, and it would be the same thing if I started back drinking again. I'd drink the same way the same drinks, that's the way I'd be. I hope they have the same thing all the time. I don't know, maybe they don't, who cares? But that's how my drinking was, folks. And I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And you know where I got sicker and sicker? From my chin up. That's where I got sicker and sicker. You know, it's a disease that tells you you don't have a disease. You know, I used to then, I'd take an ocean, I'd slow down on the booze for a while. Oh, I wouldn't stop drinking, I'd keep drinking away. And I'd save some money and then I'd take a trip back to Ireland. I used to always wonder why they didn't want to ever rent me a car. I never wondered, you know, because when I get off the plane, you know, I'd be loaded. You know what I mean? I could never understand. They never seemed to have any cars for me. They seemed to have them for everybody else, but they never had them for me. But don't worry, I'd find my way around. I get there some way, you know. Because, you know, this booze can do whatever it wants to do with you. This disease can do whatever it wants to do with you. It can change anything it wants to change about you. It did it to me, and I know lots of other people who did the same thing too as well. And that's the kind of a disease it is, you know. You know, I'd be drinking now. I'd come home now from construction in the evening, and I'd say, oh, thank God the train didn't stop between stations. And I'd go in that bar, and that man would put that shot and a beer up in front of me, and I'd say, now I'm going to have 3 shots and 3 beers, and I'm going to go and have a good dinner, and I'm going to go home early tonight. I might go home 4 hours later. I might go home 6 hours later. I never knew when I was going to go home. And the next morning, I'd come to, and the whole lot, and I'd be up, and I'd be reaching over the toilet bowl, the same thing every morning. It was the same story. Never changed one bit. I had the shakes, I had DTs, I had hallucinations, I had it all. Talk about eating, I never eat. I didn't want to eat, you know. And I'd make my way downtown, and that time they used to have what they call the porters in the bar. They were cleaners. And you'd go in there and you'd put $2 up on the counter, 6:30, 6:45 in the morning. You woke 7:30 to 3:30, and the guy would give you a shot and a beer chaser or a glass of beer, whatever. And you drink that down, you go in the toilet and you get rid of that. And then you'd come out and you'd have a couple of good drinks in. And then I'd go across to the coffee shop and I'd get a container of coffee and you throw out half it and you tell the guy to put some whiskey into that. And that's, I want to look normal, you know. I want to be, think the people would think I was a normal person, you know. You know, you think I was a normal person. And that's how I lived. That's how I lived. I got married in 1973. If the shoe was on the other foot, I wouldn't marry me, but that's the way it was. But I got married anyway. And out of that, we had three children. And, you know, I was no husband, I was no father, I was no nothing, you know what I mean? You know, I was totally irresponsible. I don't know, you know, I mean, I was, then I had these cars, I got involved with buying cars, $300 cars. Now you can imagine the kind of cars I had, you know, and the whole lot. I'll never forget one night I was coming down University Avenue in Fordham Road. I was living in Fordham at that time. And this woman, the next day or the next afternoon, she says to me, why don't you get that piece of shit she had? Why don't you get it fixed up, she says, or cleaned up or something? She said, the rolls of it at 4 o'clock in the morning, she says, it's unbelievable, she said. I thought there was something wrong with this woman, you know what I mean? You know, this woman is out of her mind. She needs to go to the mental institution. There's something wrong with this woman, you know. You know, I didn't realize there was no muffler in the car. You know, I had no insurance, I had no nothing. Never had, never got nothing. I'd be coming to a wood on the whole lot. I'd take this notion of going over to the west side of Manhattan and I'd drink a wheel till the bars closed. I definitely never left before they closed. You know, they used to have a saying down there, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. You know, and the whole lot. And I'd be coming across with this old jalopy and I'd park at some place, maybe at a fire hydrant or wherever there was, whatever. I pulled in any place, you know, and the whole lot. Like one time I remember parking at 198th Street, 189th Street on Fordham Road, and it was found below at 177th Street on Burnside Avenue. The sanitation truck couldn't get down the street, so they kept pushing the head of them, you know. Of course, I never locked the doors or did anything like that. Another time the cops used to get after me because I wouldn't get the door fixed on the driver's side. I figured, oh, I'm going to give that guy no money to fix the door, you know what I mean? I'm going to drink that. And also I used to go in and out the window of the car. That's how I used to get in and out of it, you know. So, you know, this is the insane things that was happening to me. Now, I was a guy that was well-raised with a good family back in Ireland. I mean, I have a brother that died from this disease 37 years ago. But that's the way it is. But, you know, it's such a horrible, horrible way to live, you know what I mean? Now, I often, you know, today, now that I've been sober for some time, I just say to myself, you know, was I that sick? Was I that insane? You know. And, you know, I hear people here talking, you know, I come in here, you know, just because you come in here, you think everything falls into place overnight. Let me tell you, it doesn't fall into place overnight. But things may not get better, but you'll get better. You'll get better. I was in here a good 5 years in this program, and I wasn't mentally in good shape. Not mentally in good shape, and I have to say that, you know. I ended up, so I did. I went down to see a man one day. We worked on construction together. And he said to me, it's time, Mike, he says, you know, to give up the madness. And, you know, I had been at this time going in and out of AA, but, you know, guys used to come and drag me into AA. But I had no interest in AA, you know, I mean, I used to just. Then I got a plan into my head. Now, this will just tell you how sick you are, how sick I was. I figured, you know what, I'm going to start going to these meetings. And on the way to the meeting, I'll go into a bar and I'll have four or five shots and four or five beers. And then I'll go to the meeting then. And on the way home, I can have a few more drinks. And I did that for the next 7.5 years. The next 7.5 years. That's what the way I lived for the next 7.5 years. I thought I was kidding the world. I thought I was kidding the world. I was kidding my wife. I was kidding my children. I was kidding everybody. That's the way I thought, you know. That's the way that I thought. But I wasn't kidding anybody. The only one I was kidding was me. Anyway, after 7.5 years of this insanity, anyway, I went up to a group called the Gun Hill Group, 201st Street, Bainbridge Avenue. John will tell you that group, or he knows where it is. And I met a guy there. I had seen him before for many years. He was a carpenter's union local 608, and he had a big hands on him, and he put his finger right in between here. And he said to me, you're in now this program, he said, for the last 7 or 8 years, he said, and all you're doing, he says, is telling everybody cock and bull stories, he says, and lies and everything like that. He said, you don't know the first thing about this program. You don't want to know the first thing about this program. And he said, you're driving yourself crazy. You're driving your family crazy, because my wife was after leaving down the law to me as well. And the Internal Revenue Service want to have a chat with me as well. And a few other people as well. And I'm like the late Danforth said, I had troubles with troubles and problems with problems, all caused by the use and abuse of alcohol. And this man said to me, he said, officially right now, I'm going to become your sponsor. Oh, Jesus, I said, another Irishman. I said, get stuck with this guy, this lunatic, you know. Oh, I didn't like this at all. And he said, I'm going to give you the big book, he said, and you're going to read a paragraph out of it every night. And he said, when I meet you at the meeting tomorrow night, and I forget where the meeting was on Tuesday night at that time, he said, I want you to be able to tell me what you read about. And Jesus, I said, I don't know what this guy is. I said, maybe I better try this anyway, you know. Well, anyway, I didn't drink that night. I didn't drink the next day, and I went to the meeting. And I did the same thing the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and I kept going. I was going to 9 meetings a week. Because this guy, you couldn't tell him, you know, that you weren't going to go to the meeting, you know. Then I met this other guy then and the whole lot then, and he said to me, you're just like me, he says. I was a successful failure as an active alcoholic. And he said, that's what you are. You're a successful failure as well as I was, he said. And he was right. I was a successful failure. Because everything I touched for years and years fell apart. Fell apart. I was totally irresponsible. I remember one time I got this old station wagon, and here I packed the 3 kids into it and headed up to the Bronx and the whole lot. And I went into a bar and had several drinks, and then I packed them back in and then brought them home. You know, like, you know, if I seen somebody doing that today, I'd be mortified. I would be mortified. Now, my grandchildren now come up here. We live over here in New Ridge Road, Norton Hill. And my God almighty, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm so careful at making sure they're being properly in the seat and everything is done so well, you know what I mean? I was, you know, like, you know, it's my, I, then this other man came into my life then. You all know him, Danny. Danny C. Danny's 94 now. He's down there in a nursing home in the Bronx. And Danny always says, I can't remember what I ate yesterday, but I remember sleeping on newspapers in St. Mary's Park in the South Bronx. And alcohol put me there. I'm here for the alcoholism. It's the alcoholism. There's alcohol every place all over the world, you know. But he said, I'm here for the ism. You have to remember the ism. And, you know, I never had trouble with drinking. I always had trouble with the first drink. Because no matter when I took that first drink, I could never put it down. Never put it down. From I had that bottle of Guinness and Stout at 11 years of age. And for the next 20, till I was 37, I always craved alcohol. I always craved alcohol. That's the way I am. I have an addiction like that. That's the way I am, you know. I can't even buy candy because if I do, I'll eat the whole goddamn bag, you know what I mean, you know? Yeah. And that's the way I am, you know what I mean, you know? But the thing about it is, you know, this is a God-given program here. And I started going to a lot of meetings. I was going to an average of 9 meetings a week. Well, I didn't want to go, but I had to go. And then this guy, Danny, John, then said, I'm turning you over to Danny here anyway. And I used to get turned over. I didn't know what I was doing, but they knew what they were doing. And Danny moved in to live in Manhattan, and I went down to Manhattan. I became a full-time superintendent in Manhattan. And I took on some side jobs as well. And things started to get, you know, my life started to come together, bit by bit. I was blessed to have a good wife. I still have her, thank God. And my kids are all growing now, and we have grandkids and all that stuff, you know what I mean. But, you know, it's a terror what this disease can do to your mind, what you do to your thinking. You know, I used to say, I'd say to Danny, you know what I mean, you know, Danny, I should have 3 houses. He said, you're lucky to have the one you have because you drank the price of the other 2. These kind of guys, they were tough guys, these guys. These guys had been through the mill with this disease of alcoholism, you know. Danny's a man now, 94. At 17 years of age, he was arrested in Ireland for drunken disorderly in Dublin City, you know what I mean? So he knew what he was talking about, you know what I mean, you know? And these were the kind of people I associate with. And I'm still associating with people today that have longevity in this program. It doesn't mean I don't associate with people that have a short time in. I associate with everybody today. And I love to see man or woman, boy or girl, come through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and get the help that they can get, because this is the place to get it. I was one night standing outside of Montefiore Hospital, Bainbridge Avenue, 207th Street on Bainbridge Avenue, and an elderly man, very elderly man, said to me, there's only one place, Mike, he said, for an alcoholic. And he said, that's the rooms, the program, and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because he said, I've been going to doctors and psychiatrists for years and years, he said, never done me any good, he said. The only place I got help was in the program, the rooms, and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's one alcoholic sharing with another. One alcoholic sharing with another. You know, I spent hours sitting on benches in the Bronx, in Manhattan, in Queens, Rose, wherever it was. And, you know, and I go to meetings no matter where I go. Since I got sober, my wife and I have went on many cruises. And the only reason I went on the cruise is because they had a program on the cruise. And I still met a guy on the cruise I drank with in Highbridge. I seem to always meet people no matter where I go. You know, and, you know, it's the same thing. I go to Ireland, I have my meetings there. I go to Florida, I have my meetings there. I have it all, you know what I mean, you know. I wake up every morning, the first words I say is, I want to be sober today. This is a 24-hour program. Like sometimes I hear people saying, I'm going to take a break from AA, a break from AA. Jesus Christ, I'd be licking the lock of a door at 7:30 in the morning to get into a bar, so when I'm here, I'm going to take a break from AA. You know. See, you always got to watch your thinking. See, the thinking is what you got to watch out for, your thinking. Because your thinking can do a lot of damage. I'm well aware of, we had a man down, I belonged to the Lincoln Park Group in Yonkers for 27 years before I came up here. And when COVID came, that same man and many more like him quit going to meetings. They said they couldn't go to A because it might be COVID there. The next thing was they're in the liquor store on McLean Avenue buying a bottle. Last year, I sat beside a man for 2 months in Florida, lived in Jersey, became very, very successful, got a big house and big car and big everything, picked up a drink after 35 years in the program, and he was down there with the shakes. 9 months with the shakes. He had them every day. He said, I can't get rid of them. He said. And I haven't had a drink in 9 months. He said, I can't stop shaking. He had 35 good years in this program. You know, I often wonder, you know, what was he listening to? You know, that's why I keep myself, I do a meeting with myself in the car. I go driving in the car. I was over twice today in Columbia Hospital. I left a friend of mine over there to have a procedure done, and I went back to pick him up this evening. I do have meetings with myself in my car. Then steps, you know what I mean? I hear people rushing into the steps. Oh my God, I got to get through the steps. I was 12 years before I got to the 12th step. You know why? I'm the type of an individual, and my sponsor said this to me. Make sure you know the meaning of every word and every sentence in these steps. So important, and that first step is so important. I'm still practicing that first step every day. Every day I practice these steps, because they are the bridge back to life. They're the vitamin C of this program. This is a program of want. This is not a program of need. Hundreds of thousands of people out there need this program. It's for those who want it. I thought tonight I wouldn't make it here because I'd arranged with John to be here because if this man got much longer in the hospital than he was supposed to be. But thank God I did. You know, it's my second meeting today. And tomorrow at 12 noon, if somebody would like to move over to the Higher Power Group in Greenville, in the rectory there, we have a meeting at 12 o'clock. So come on over. It's a good way to start Thanksgiving. You know, you'll be more than welcome, you know. There's no better place for people like us than the program and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much.